Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, where we focus on lab-specific strategies for medical laboratory professionals. We're proud to be the healthcare detectives that work behind the scenes to get the results needed to influence medical decisions. Let's grow together and jump right into the lab.
Well, welcome back to another episode of the eLaborate Topics podcast. Thank you for tuning in today. We appreciate all of our listeners who have followed us along on this three-year journey. We are in season three. It's so hard to believe that 3 years ago, my co-hosts Tywana Wilson and Lona Small started this laboratory-based podcast, and now we have over 20,000 downloads and listeners from all over the globe. So we thank you guys for being dedicated listeners to our episode. Today, we've got a very special guest in the studio, Ms. Sherry Hodge. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. We've got a really interesting and needed conversation today about diversity with Ms. Hodge. Before we get too deep into it, I want you to click the share button and share this episode out with all of your colleagues. Don't be stingy. Don't keep this information to yourself. Share this with your friends. We're on all podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, Google, wherever you hear your podcasts at. And then we're also affiliates with Labvine. So you can go over to Labvine and get your free membership and listen to our podcast as well as others on Labstream. And so I'm excited for today's episode. Let's go ahead and get straight into it. Ms. Hodge, or I'm just going to call you Sherry, why don't you tell the listeners about yourself and your laboratory journey and how you got to where you are today?
Well, first, let me say thank you for having me, Stephanie. I appreciate this opportunity to come on your platform and talk a little bit about laboratory life from a director standpoint, I guess I should say. A little about me, I currently serve as the Director of Instructional Laboratory Operations for Mount San Jacinto College District. We have three campuses, three main campuses, spanning Southwest Riverside County, about 20,000 miles from sort of around Palm Springs to Temecula area, around that area we cover. And within my responsibilities, I do cover the three campuses, the laboratories on those campuses, including life science and physical science. So all the organic chem, general chem, micro, anatomy, all the fun stuff. So I've been overseeing the labs now for almost about 4 years in that capacity. Previous to that, I was a lab tech. I was the, I guess you could say, the professional lab tech. I loved everything about bench life. I started with the district when I was very young, about 27 years ago, as a student worker, and was taking micro and anatomy, and just asked the instructor, hey, do you need a student worker? And he was like, sure. And he just brought me on as a student worker for that one semester. I had no idea what I was doing, no idea where I was going, what my path in life was. I was a single mom, so I was raising a young child. And it was just something to, you know, hold me over at that point while I was figuring it out, and I could go to school and get free childcare. So it was just a win-win situation. Fast forward, maybe about a semester or two, and they brought me on temporary, and then I just moved through the ranks. We had four levels at that time. So little by little, I started as a lab tech 1, 2, 3, all the way up to 4. Fast forward, December 2019, my boss, retired. I have been working with him for 20 something years, and I felt stagnant. I felt like the job wasn't serving me as much anymore, and I needed somewhat of a challenge. So what happens? COVID happens. We're all challenged, you know, at that time. So I had the opportunity to walk into the director position as an interim. And hesitantly, I declined a couple of times. And then maybe about the third time, I was like, okay, let me try it. And boy, was I in for a surprise. Laboratory life is so much different than the institution as a whole. You know, when you're in a laboratory, you're in your silo, you're in your comfort zone. But to step into administration, it was a different walk. It had its own challenges, but I survived and I'm still here. So 4 years later, I'm still director of operations and I like it. I'm not gonna say I like it. I found my purpose in this position is what I can truly say.
Well, congratulations. I know that COVID forced so many of us to take pivots and take next leaps and challenges in our career. And so congratulations on taking that next step and continuing to conquer it. I'm for our listeners, I met Sherry at a recent conference that I was at, and she was doing a session surrounded around the topic of diversity. And I felt just so connected and just so drawn to her and the story behind why she was doing her session that I wanted to bring her on the show and just have her share her information and her knowledge around this just really essential. It's a really essential topic right now for our country, for our culture, for our profession, and as many people as we can have on the show that can share their perspective and help open our listeners' eyes to just different things that they need to learn or maybe things that they need to add to themselves professionally. I feel like we could all only just benefit from that. And so we're neither one of us are professional. Sherry knows way more than I do about this topic, but I'm hoping to learn just a little bit more that I could add to my professional and laboratory tool belt. So let's get right into it, Sherry. From your perspective and your opinion, and what you've just learned through the industry, tell the listeners what is diversity and what diversity is not when it pertains to the laboratory and our work environments.
Okay. First, let me say I'm not an expert, but I just feel like when you know more, when you know, there's an old saying, when you know better, you do better. And so that's sort of the attitude that I take is like, if I'm not willing to talk about it, then who's going to talk about it? Because oftentimes we're given what we don't want, not what we need in certain situations, in certain spaces. So for me, diversity is important because it is everything that makes America great. You know, when you really think about America and you think about, you know, this melting pot, as they used to call it, but it is what makes things work. If we were all the same and had the same ideology, we would never get anywhere. We would stay status quo. I feel it's important in the laboratory because, as I mentioned to you, I am often one of the only Black women in those spaces. When I'm in meetings, when I'm in department meetings, when I'm talking to department chairs, I'm often in this space and I feel like I'm out on a ledge by myself. Like there's no one for me to turn to at times. Faculty have their own cohort of, you know, peers, but in a director level, you don't really have that. So what I feel is diversity is what's needed to keep things fresh, to keep things moving, to keep you uncomfortable. Because if you're too comfortable, you're not really growing, you're content with status quo. What it's not is a quota. What it's not is a futile, you know, checkbox of, oh, we met the quota through representation. But now that you have representation, what are you allowing those people within that representation? What type of responsibilities are you giving them? Those type of things. So I think for me, just making sure everybody understands, you know, I'll be in interviews to this day and we ask diversity questions through our hiring panel, and you'll still hear people say, well, I don't see color, you know, and I'm like, well, then you don't see me. How can you not see me if you don't see color? Because I identify as a Black woman. So, you know, it's just important to understand why identity is so important, why diversity is so important, and not just having people in positions where they feel like they're a quota mark or, you know, just meeting the minimum requirement, but that you're also mentoring and empowering them to make those decisions and those changes within the laboratory institutions and it goes across the gamut. It's not just, you know, in one sector, just education only. It's diversity daily. That's my motto. It's diversity daily, every day, even on weekends.
I love the term diversity daily. And what you said is so true. It's not just about making sure that you have the representation. It's making sure that those people who are represented in your laboratory space also feel included, right? Mm-hmm. That their perspectives, their thoughts, their ideas are also inclusive. And that's that inclusive part of DE&I. And, you know, right now, while we are going through this extreme workforce shortage, so well documented, and STEM and in laboratory medicine, where, you know, there's not much draw to being a professional 4-year degreed person, let alone a person working in the laboratory profession. You know, people can make more money on social media and on YouTube. And so while we're going through this workforce shortage, really valuing the people who decide to take this venture and this voyage into the laboratory profession. So, in your opinion, also in terms of DE&I, what are some of the biggest challenges we face in the clinical lab today? And then maybe what are some of your ideas or advice on how laboratory directors or laboratory management staff can help tackle those challenges?
I think part of the biggest is the biggest challenges. One of the major challenges, I guess you could say, is that, within diversity and within the laboratory setting, especially for my institution, I find the biggest challenges are coming through the generational cohorts. You know, you have some people who are Gen X, baby boomers, and they're set in their ways. And now, especially post-COVID, we're so technology driven. And you get the millennials and the Gen Zs, and they come in, and technology, they can do it in their sleep. So, you know, it's just making sure that you have a team, not only diverse in demographics, but diverse in skill levels, diverse in different talents. I try to staff my team with people who have strengths different than me. Because if we all bring in the same strengths, we're going to be stuck doing the same thing. So I'm not afraid. I think there's like a little taboo, like, oh, if we bring in somebody from the outside, they're going to know we're doing something wrong, or they're going to know we're not doing this right. But I think every lesson is a teachable moment. So I allow myself the opportunity to make mistakes sometimes, because I don't have a blueprint. I am the first director of operations for my district. No one has done this position before me, so I've had to figure it out on my own a little bit. But just making sure that I'm stacked with a team that's diverse, not only in talents, not only in demographics, but that everybody is included, that everybody feels heard. I lead with transparency. I feel that I am totally equity minded, meaning that that's first and foremost in how I lead. And doing so, I allow myself, like, I don't have to keep up with what I said or what I'm doing, or, oh, I told this person this, or I told this person that. Oh my goodness, what if they talk? I'm so transparent that it allows for a sense of trust to be built within the culture. Like, you can come talk to me. You can bring it to me. I've created an amazing team. I'm so proud of them. I've just surrounded myself with a team who buys into my vision. You know, it may not necessarily follow the big picture, but on the small, in the laboratories, they buy in and they're willing to do the work with me. So,
now, from the work that you've been doing, maybe, you know, on a national platform or just in your community or with other organizations, you and I met at a conference that was hosted by the Laboratory Summit. And just from the networking you've done, maybe what are some of the mistakes that you were seeing that other lab managers might be making? I know in my network, I've got, you know, laboratory directors that operate in rural laboratories or in smaller cities. And then some of the mistakes that they make are that they, you know, shy away from you know, training students. They feel like it's not worth our time to, you know, bring students in because we already have so much work. And to me, you know, you're missing out on the opportunity to not only train the next generation of laboratory professionals, but to also coach and mentor people who would be your colleagues in the future. But then also, you know, I have laboratory professionals who, like you said, have that maybe it's known or unknown bias against, I don't want to hire somebody who's too tenured. I'm not going to say old. They're too tenured because they're going to retire soon. I don't want to hire somebody who's too young. What do they know? We're going to have to train them too much. You know, so what are some of the biggest mistakes, maybe either in hiring or in operations that you see that lab management makes when it comes to diversity, equity, inclusion?
From the laboratory setting, I feel like personally, so speaking from my experience in the laboratory setting and then hiring, we oftentimes, you know, we look for representation. We look for these people, these unicorns in the stack of all these digital applications that stand out. But then we bring them in and then we tie their hands, sort of. So we say, okay, we got you here, but we're not ready to move yet. Like, just wait a little bit. One of the biggest challenges I have right now is getting administration to understand and recognize that the sciences run a little bit different. You know, we are an academic institution and you just think class is class. You go to this class, you go to that class. But from the lab tech standpoint, they do have different experiences within the campus community. Their responsibilities are different. A brunt of the responsibilities falls on their shoulders, making sure all the classes are prepped, that the students are trained in safety. So just bringing that to administration to not lump us in, like not treat us like a monolith, like this one big institution and we all run the same. Also, mentoring. Sometimes when you're trying to get representation, you have people within the institution, or not necessarily representation, but when you have people that are skilled within your institution, we often overlook those people. Those people often get pushed to the side, and it changes the culture a little bit, the morale. But mentoring, encouraging, bringing people in, I will tell anybody, interim was the best thing I could have ever did for this position, because it allowed me the opportunity to see without feeling like I had to produce right away. Like, I got the opportunity to take a step back and say, okay, this is a different area. I've never seen the college from this perspective. So now let me take my time to walk through this process a little bit different and see what's really required of me. So I think it becomes a game of managing expectations between administration and between the lab tech staff, like really making sure that the main thing is the main thing, and we're getting to those things as we're progressing through the day, not just on a hamster wheel.
You said something that I want to go back to, because I think it's a really good point. And we even talked about it before the podcast recording. And you mentioned that there are so few African-American women or Black women in STEM, and even fewer in laboratory medicine. When you and I, you know, met, we just automatically connected with that commonality, with that string of commonality between us. But so many listeners could feel that, you know, especially when you get higher and higher in your administrative ranks, you could be not just the only African-American woman in the room, you could be the only disabled person in the room. You could be, you know, the only, you know, foreign practitioner in the room. You know, we're hiring so many people who have, you know, foreign certifications or degrees. And so for listeners who might feel like whatever your only is in terms of diversity, I'm the only in the room. What have you done, or what are some things that you do personally to, I don't want to say overcome that, but to move through that and kind of navigate that and feel comfortable with that? Because like we talked about, it can be exhausting But you still have a purpose and you still have things you have to do. So how do you personally move through that?
I think my biggest trait that or characteristic that I've adopted in moving through those challenges is allyship. And with allyship, you bridge diversity, equity, and inclusion. So I've learned how to check a lot of my biases at the door. I have one staff that is transgender, and I've known the staff for 20 plus years. And that was probably the first inclination of, ooh, I got some self-reflection to do because I was bothered by it. Well, this has nothing to do with me, so this is not my issue. And so I had to really learn how to be an ally for this person and really had to learn how, you know, don't misgender, correct. And so within that, I just create that safe space. My office is a safe space. I have an open door policy. People can come in, they can close the door, they can leave the door open. They can reach me at any time. But if my Hispanic and Latinx staff are going to an event, I'm going to an event. If my African-American Umoja students are going or performing or doing something, I'm there as well. So it's just allyship and transparency, being out there, not just saying, oh, I do this. Oh, I'm inclusive. This is how I work, but actually showing and leading by example and putting myself out there. So
now, not all lab directors are as evolved as you. Sherry, I think you're doing an awesome job. And those are some wonderful best practices that I think we can all take away from this episode. But if there is a listener who perhaps feels like, because some of this is, I'm a professional, I'm at work too. And, you know, I hope that I can bring my entire self to work. Like there's so many, things out there now who talk about trying to break down. We've heard those sayings, you know, I want to have work-life balance. And there's so much literature out there now trying to break that down. Like there is no work-life balance. There's just balance. You know, I want to bring my whole self to work and I want to be able to come home to my life and have the two just balance. And obviously you and I, you know, are doing a lot of work within ourselves and around our teams to be pretty progressive and learn from others. And like you said, continue to know better so we can do better. But if we have a listener out there who is maybe working under the administration of a person who isn't this evolved, we obviously can't control other people. All we can do is control ourselves. And we talk about that all the time. But we do like to give the listeners tools that they can take away from. And so if there's a listener and in their professional space, they may feel uncomfortable or feel like their environment isn't as diverse as they need it to be. What are some suggestions you may have on what they can do in that situation or how they can help to be the starter and increase the DE&I situation in their lab or in their organization?
I would suggest that, you know, they just speak up. It's heavy work. It's really heavy work. During the George Floyd murder, I won't say incident, I will just call it what it was the first draw to diversity for myself. It was during that time, you know, we're on COVID, we're at home. I was at home by myself. I'm an empty nester. So the walls started closing in on me a little bit. Your mind starts playing tricks with you a little bit. But I just knew there had to be something different. We were going through these roundtables every week because everything was so in the news. You know, the numbers were rising, the death cases, everything was negative. And then you have this, I heard on one of your shows, one of the young ladies called it the Great Racial Awakening. And everybody's eyes are open. But when we began to talk about it, a lot of the work fell on the African Americans. Like it was asking us to be vulnerable, to tell them how we felt, but it was very PTSD for me. Every time I came out of these meetings, I was crying. I was overwhelmed. I was mentally drained. And then something else would happen. They would be like, okay, well, let's move on. We're past that. Let's move on to this next thing, this next tragedy that's happening. And I was just able to say, I can't move on. I have to stop. I have to process my emotions. If it's heavy for me, it needs to be heavy for you too. And now that you've seen it, that was the best thing. We were all at home looking at the same thing at the same time. So no one could then deny and say, you know, it's not that bad. No, you know, things aren't as bad as we think they are. No, they are. We have not come that far. We've come far, but not far enough. So I think that was where I was able to go to my administrator and really say, I don't think it's our job to teach you how to go about this. We live it every day. We know it exists, but it's exhausting to then have to teach you what not to do or what to do. So in that, you know, I lean in, I speak up, I allow open dialogue. If people have questions, you know, I don't shy away from those questions. You know, people ask about our braids and things like that. I find teachable moments to plant seeds that people can take home, that they can just bloom within them. You don't have to have all the answers. For me, I thought it was specifically, oh, now I got to go get this PhD. Now I got to get this next degree so people can understand what this is. And once I got there and I'm in this program, the literature doesn't lie. Like, there's literature for the last 25 years to show that African-American women in leadership and academics and STEM are adversely affected. There's nothing that I can bring to that that's different. It's there. It is what it is. So it was just more so about, you know, asking for training. Can you bring somebody in? Can you bring somebody in to discuss this? And thankfully, I work for an organization that has done a great job at bringing in speakers, providing professional development, allowing the safe space to speak up, because sometimes it's hard to be like, I think this is a little racist. I think this feels, as a person of color, as a Black woman, this makes me feel some type of way. So I had to be comfortable with doing that. And the same thing at the conference. That's how I spoke at the conference as well. You know, some of the PowerPoint slides didn't have culturally sensitive images in them. And I just started speaking to one of the ladies like, hey, who vets these slides? Because in academics, it's different than in clinical. You're in clinical, so you go by a different set of rules. But in academics, culturally relevant teaching is a thing. And so you have to make sure that everybody is represented in those images. So that was my opportunity to speak up. My boss told me, if you don't speak up, you're being complicit to the behavior. So I try to speak up in those aspects. But realize, you do have to, when you're carrying these burdens and you're fighting these things, you do have to have the balance to manage your emotions. It can't be all heavy work every day. You know, little victories are victories too. So there has to be some balance there.
I totally agree. Thank you for that answer. You know, there's an old adage in management that states, like, you know, take care of your people so they won't quit. We take care of our people so we can retain them. And I feel like, you know, there's a huge movement to shift from that, to just say, look, let's take care of our people because they're people. Everybody is a person. Everybody is carrying things that we know nothing about. I love that you brought up, you know, LGBTQ plus community in this. And let's just take care of our people because everybody has something professional to bring to the table. You're such an advocate in this space. And I know you talked a lot about professional growth, and we know professional growth is intentional. So I wonder, what do you do for your own professional growth to make sure that you are staying current, to understand, you know, all of the latest news and practices when it comes to DE&I? What resources do you use as you go through your growth in this area?
Thankfully, like I said, my institution does provide resources. I've been able to participate, and I participated in USC Race Against Equity. One of their cohorts, our district, put some management through, so I was able to do that. I seek every opportunity through webinars and things of that nature. I recently just joined our Equal Employment Opportunity Advisory Committee so that I can make sure that it has to come outside of the laboratory too. All the work is not done in the laboratory, it's done on the outside, but so that I can better understand what the chancellor is asking of us when we're getting these initiatives, when we're being fed this information, like, hey, these are the new goals, the benchmarks we're trying to reach. So different things like that. Podcast, I'm a big podcaster. I think I've listened to all yours since I went through.
Thank you. So
what I was getting into, but definitely podcast and seminars, as you know, conferences, things of that nature, and also going back to school and finishing my PhD will top it off when I get there.
When you get there, everything happens in its time.
Yeah.
So I got some quick hitters for you as we wrap up. What's one question that you wished I would have asked you that you would have liked to answer? Is there anything that I didn't ask you?
No, there's nothing. I don't know. I would probably say, what's been my greatest achievement thus far in the position, or my greatest challenge to overcome, maybe something of that nature. Mm-hmm. I would say I am going through, we just opened one campus in Temecula, in which I have the sciences occupy the fifth floor. And then we have two buildings being built simultaneously on two other campuses, on San Jacinto and Menifee, two STEM buildings specifically. So learning and managing expectations of end users has been so insightful to me. Being allowed the opportunity to see the process from the inside out, to really see how all the pieces come together instead of just saying, here's your space, make it work. You know, really making diligent and intentional efforts to say, no, let me show you why this is not functional or efficient for lab use. We don't want a pretty space. We want a functional space. We want an efficient space. So I would say that's probably been one of my biggest achievements, is seeing these processes, these buildings come to fruition. And so we have one opening in spring of 2024, and then another one in fall of 2024. So these are my legacy milestones for my tenure here at MSJC.
Yes. And in terms of advice that you would leave the listeners with, what is one piece of advice, or maybe a book or a movie or another resource, podcast? You said you're a big podcaster, a resource that you would recommend for the listeners and our audience.
For me as a Black woman, one of the podcasts that really got me through COVID and, you know, in searching, trying to turn your brain off and looking for things to, am I the only one going through this? Am I the only one feeling like this? Are there other people out there feeling like this? So really searching for that community. And so one of the podcasts that I found is called Be Well Sis. It's by a host, Cassandra Dunbar, and she's a doctor, but now she's in academics. But she just talks about mental health. She's a wellness advocate. And that's really, it really sings with me. It's really touched me. So now as I traverse diversity, now I'm tagging on to diversity and wellness advocate. life coach. I just got my life coach certificate. So life coaching, things of that nature. I really want to create space for not only women of color, but for, I hate to use the word marginalized, but marginalized people, where they can come and feel comfortable, where they can come and feel supported, where they can come and feel heard. How that pans out, I don't know. I don't know what capacity that will be in. I don't know where this road will take me as far as going on the wellness advocacy, but I know it's intentional. I know it's my purpose. I know it's my path. So I'm just going to be diligent and keep walking that path. And whatever doors open, those are the doors I'll walk through. But no limiting beliefs, no limiting beliefs, you know, sky's the limit. The opportunities are there. You just have to be willing to step outside your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And final question, but there's a homework assignment attached to it. We're going to put you to work, Sherry. Name a guest that you'd like to see on our show, but you have to help me get your answer on this show.
I would actually say Cassandra Dunbar, although I don't know her personally, I do feel like I know her personally because I've been listening to her for years, but I think I can make it happen.
Okay, we're going to work on it. You've
heard it from first. Yeah, bring some academics into this laboratory talk.
Let's do it. Cassandra, you have been just a joy and a pleasure to talk to. You've given our listeners so much insight and so many things to think about. If anybody wants to connect with you or continue to work with you, you said you were a life coach, maybe get some coaching from you after this. Tell the listeners how they can connect with you after listening to this episode.
Yes, I am. The best way is on LinkedIn. My name is spelled Cherie Hodge, and that's probably the best way. Unfortunately, my social media is tailored specifically to my needs as it relates to my mental health and my mental being. And so I'm not ready to jump into social media and start working every time I jump on social media, but LinkedIn would probably be the best, or my email, chodge@msjc.edu.
Let me tell you, even me, sometimes I have to take a social media vacation because it can suck you in, you know, and I encourage that for anybody, for your mental health. If you start to feel like I'm spending more time scrolling through Instagram and looking at everybody else's life than I am on improving my own life, then it's time to take a break. So I do encourage social media vacations, you know, social media fasts, so social media cleansings.
All types of cleansings, everything. Sometimes you just have to shut down, you know. The world is fast and we're so desensitized to so many different things, especially with social media. You know, you get on social media in one day and you can see nothing but negativity, deaths, murders, all these different things. And then to be able to just scroll past it and move on to your day, it just doesn't sit well with me personally, you know. And after the George Floyd, like, I've been very specific about what I ingest and what I look at. And so I'm not just ingesting negative all day. So, you know, that's my one little piece of me that, you know, I get to keep private to myself. So
I love that. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate you being here.
Well, thank you for having me. I enjoyed meeting you at the conference. Sorry I missed your session. But yes, just to be able to create this type of community. I lack that in academics, you know, because I don't have somebody I could just reach out to and be like, hey, what are you doing over here at this on your campus over there? So meeting people like myself that are like-minded, it's not often, but when it happens and the connection is real, I appreciate it. So I appreciate you giving me this opportunity.
Well, once you're on the show once, you can come back whenever you want. You you have an open door.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Whenever you like. Thank you to our listeners who tuned in today to hear this very important and needed podcast episode about diversity with Ms. Sherry Hodge. We appreciate every single time you guys tune in. Make sure that you comment on this episode and then share in the conversation with us in our Elaborate Topics group on LinkedIn. We'd love to hear from you about this topic and as well as other topics that you'd like us to bring up in here. Be sure, like I said, to share this episode out and to engage with us on all forms of our social media. We love connecting with you guys. We love talking to you guys. And we love bringing you new information. So until next week, thank you so much to Sherry Hodge. And thank you for our listeners who tuned in. And everybody have a great week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics, where your hosts discussed relevant strategies for laboratory professionals. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and listen to us on directimpactbroadcasting.com. Stay tuned for another episode with information you can use to excel in your laboratory career.